So the first picture for you this morning is a picture of an Indianapolis native. There it is, an Indianapolis native named Richard Aflis. Now, he played professional football for the Green Bay Packers for 4 years. But he is probably more well known as a professional wrestler, 15-time world champion wrestler known as Dick the Bruiser. Until his retirement. Okay, second picture for you is a guy by the name of Tim Riplogle. Your guess is as good as mine. Just make it up with confidence and everybody will think you know what you're talking about. he wrestled for 20 years under the name The Golden Lion. Now, he was an IU graduate, which today he's probably very, very pleased because IU knocked off the number one team in the country yesterday by 5 points. Number one team in the country at that moment was Purdue. And so not only did they not knock off the number one team, they knocked off their most heated rival. So this guy wrestled for 20 years under the Golden Lion. And then he met a young lady with whom he became smitten. She happened to be the daughter of Richard Aflis. And so they married, and after he married Dick the Bruiser's daughter, he started wrestling under the name Dick the Bruiser Jr. When he would win a match, he would invite kids to come up into the ring, and they would do the Bruiser dance together. Now, I don't know what the Bruiser dance is, and if I did, I wouldn't do it for you because no one would want to see that. The last I knew, there was a period of time where he owned a wrestling clinic in Fort Wayne, Indiana. I think it has since closed, and I don't know the status of his life or anything like that. Next picture is a guy by the name of Terry Eugene Bollea. Most of us know him as Hulk Hogan. Hulk Hogan is probably the world's most recognized wrestler. And he has been the feature in 8 out of the first 9 WrestleMania events, which has been held 38 times as professional wrestling's flagship event. So, these 3 pictures and these 3 people lead us to one of life's most defining questions. It is a question that has to be asked and answered. When the answer to this question is right, all is right with the world. When the answer to this question is unsettled or wrong, the world is left in complete chaos. It is a question that has haunted us for decades. The question, is professional wrestling real or fake? Or is it just a big waste of time? So when I was a teenager, professional wrestling was known as the WWF, the World Wrestling Federation. Since that time, it has become the world WWE, World Wrestling Entertainment. So I'm a little ashamed to admit this, but when I was younger, my dad and I actually attended a WWF event when Hulk Hogan was at the top of the wrestling heap. And so we're sitting there, and the crowd's all hyped up, and, you know, next thing you know, the Hulk Hogan music starts, and all the Hulkamaniacs start in. You know, they'd all been trained. They'd all been encouraged to train, to say your prayers, and eat your vitamins, and they're all hyped up. Hulk Hogan's entering the ring. He's entering the stadium. He's working his way through the crowd, and this kid off to the side of us reaches out and touches him. And the kid turns and holds his hands up and goes, "I got sweat! I got sweat!" It was more than real. It was surreal. Now, I will tell you, back in my day, in those days, it was World Wrestling Federation, and now it's World Wrestling Entertainment. So I'm convinced that in my day, when I win, it was real. And now, since it's entertainment, now it's all fake. But, you know, there are areas in life, in which we wrestle. There are so many areas in life in which it becomes almost like a wrestling match. There are people who wrestle with life circumstances. Why did this happen? Why did this work out? Why didn't things go like I planned? There are things that wrestle with how to approach life. What do I do now? You know, what do I do when? What do I do if? What do I do because? All of those things. And it's this wrestling match of life. And then people begin to wrestle. What's God's role in all of it? Is God really for us, like people want us to believe? Is God really even involved in the turmoil of my life? Does God really care? And sometimes it comes to this wrestling match of, is God even real? And sometimes, it seems like the journey of life, the entire journey from start to finish, is just one long wrestling match. Which may seem to be the case for a guy in the biblical narrative by the name of Jacob. Jacob was a guy who wrestled all through life. And some of the most popular stories of Jacob's life that have shared throughout history and throughout church, if you grew up in church, you probably heard several of Jacob's stories. But Jacob's life is a life of wrestling. From the very, very beginning. From the very beginning, Jacob's life is marked by a moment of wrestling. This is what it says in Genesis. It says, "Then the other twin was born with his hand grasping Esau's heel." So Jacob is a twin. Jacob and Esau are twins. They're born to parents by the name of Isaac and Rebekah. And when they're born, Jacob is born grasping Esau's heel. He's already wrestling with his brother. So they named him Jacob. The name Jacob, which we'll come back to later if I don't forget, means supplanter. So Jacob is trying to, at his birth, supplant Esau as the firstborn. Isaac was 60 years old when the twins were born. So in the very, very beginning, Jacob's life is marked by wrestling. He's trying to supplant Esau as the firstborn, which was very significant in that day. And God tells Isaac and Rebekah, his mom and dad, he tells Isaac and Rebekah that these two boys will wrestle and their descendants will wrestle throughout history. Now, without getting bogged down in a bunch of details, The descendants of Esau and Jacob wrestle for a long time throughout history. So just a real quick, as quick as I can. Esau is also known as Edom. If you're familiar with the biblical narrative, have you ever heard of the Edomites? Who did the Edomites fight with? The Edomites almost always fought, according to the Bible, they fought with all the nations around them because that's just what the nations did at the time. But one of the nations they fought with was the Israelites. So the Edomites are descendants of Esau. The Israelites are descendants of Jacob, and they fight all the time. So this life is marked by a life of wrestling. So a little bit later in Jacob's story, he deceives his father. So his father Isaac, the biblical text tells us that Isaac loved Esau more than Jacob because Esau was an outdoors type. He was rough and he was all of that stuff. And Rebekah, his mom, preferred Jacob because Jacob was a little more passive. He was a little bit more of a homebody and all of that. And so there was this tension between Esau and Jacob because of how their mom and dad treated them. Well, at one point, again, because of the firstborn and the birthright and all of that went into the cultural customs of the day, Jacob tricks his dad and tricks his brother. He tricks his brother into giving him his birthright, and he tricks his dad into giving him Esau's inheritance and all of that. So as you might imagine, this trickery, this deceit, this wrestling for position begins to create some tension in the family line. Here's what it says. It says, "From that time on, Esau hated Jacob because their father had given Jacob the blessing. And Esau began to scheme, "I will soon be mourning my father's death. Then I will kill my brother." So this wrestling that goes on between them leads to the point where Rebecca, Jacob's mom, knows that Esau is upset, knows that Isaac is upset, and she encourages Jacob to go to a place called Haran, which we've heard about before. He goes to a place called Haran where her brother Laban lives, and she wants Jacob to go and live with Laban. So Jacob starts out on this journey to go live with Laban. And as he goes to live with Laban, he gets to a place and he begins to camp for the night. And as he camps for the night, he has a dream. And in that dream, he sees what is called Jacob's ladder, which is also called a stairway to heaven. I'll pause for just a minute and let the song go through your head. He sees this stairway to heaven. And in this dream, God begins to speak to him. And here's what God says to Jacob. He says, "I am the Lord, the God of your grandfather Abraham, who God had made promises to." If you weren't with us last week and you want to go out online and check out last week's message, you can do it by video at YouTube, through the church's website. You can do it through audio on the church's website. Or if you want, I'll just give it again now. If you weren't here. No takers. So, he says, "Your grandfather Abraham, who I had made promises, and the God of your father Isaac, the ground you are lying on belongs to you." So, God promises Jacob land. He says, "The land you are lying on." Go back to the promise that he made to Abraham, promised him to give him land. "I am giving it to you and your descendants. Your descendants will be as numerous as the dust of the earth." Now, God promises Jacob descendants. Here's the thing. Jacob is not yet married. Jacob does not have any kids. Jacob is fleeing the land that he lived in and is basically homeless because of the dynamics in their family. And so God says, "You will have descendants as numerous as the dust of the earth," which is a similar promise to what he made to Abraham. "They will spread out in all directions, to the west and the east, to the north and to the south," which again is kind of the same thing that he promised. "And all the families of the earth will be blessed through you and your descendants." Same promise that he made to Abraham. So he's revisiting through Abraham's grandson what he had promised to him. And again, Jacob is fleeing because of the problem he caused in his own family. And now God is telling him, "All the families of the earth will be blessed through you and your descendants. What's more," I love that, "what's more," okay, so I'm going to give you land, I'm going to give you a big family, all the nations on the earth, all the families on the earth will be blessed for you. And as if that's not enough, "what's more, I am with you." And so he promises Jacob got his presence. God promises his presence. "I will be with you, and I will protect you." And he's promising protection. Promising protection to someone who is homeless and fleeing for their life because their brother is waiting until their dad dies, and when their dad dies, then I'm going to kill you. And I will protect you wherever you go. One day, I will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I have finished giving you everything I have promised you. So when Jacob gets up the next morning, we would think that Jacob would be a changed man. And he continues on his journey, his flight journey from Esau, who wants to kill him, towards Laban's home. And on the way, he encounters a young girl, and he becomes completely smitten by this young girl. Her name is Rachel. And he falls helplessly, head over heels, stairway to heaven, in love with Rachel. And Rachel is the daughter of Laban, his mom's brother. I don't get the whole family connection thing in this day. It was just kind of weird. But Jacob wants to marry Rachel. The problem in the culture of the day, interestingly enough, the problem in the culture of the day isn't that they're cousins, which, again, I don't get. The problem in the culture of the day is that Rachel has an older sister by the name of Leah. And according to the day and the customs of the day, the oldest sister had to be married first. And so through some trickery and some deceit and some wrestling on Laban's part, Laban gets Jacob to work for him for 7 years to marry Rachel. And when he works for him for 7 years and he gets ready to marry Rachel and they go through the ceremony and the bride is revealed, all of a sudden it's Leah instead of Rachel. And Jacob says, "You tricked me." And Laban says, "Yes, I did." I don't know if that's how they said it, but that's how I hear it. "Yes, I did." And Jacob says, "I wanted to marry Rachel." And Laban said, "I know, but I couldn't give you Rachel until Leah was married, and so I thought the best plan was just to trick you and have you marry Leah first. Now, work for me another 7 years, and I'll give you Rachel." And so Jacob works for another 7 years. And imagine the wrestling that's going on in this. And then something else happens, and Laban comes back and says, "Well, work for me another 7 years." And so 20 years through this wrestling, 20 years through this trickery and deceit, Jacob finally says, "I want to go back to the land. It's time to go back to the land that God promised to give me." And so they make this deal, and it has to do with the sheep and the speckled ones and the spotted ones, and you get to keep these and I get to keep these. And then Jacob does something and completely decimates Laban's flock to the point that Jacob's going to get to keep it all. And Jacob does some trickery and deceit and wrestling of his own here, which is part of his pattern in life. And all of a sudden, in this trickery and deceit, Laban's sons go, "Wait, we want to kill you. Maybe even more so than your brother Esau did. And if we get to you before Esau does, we're going to kill you." So Jacob takes off. He sets this course to go back to the land that God promised. And guess what that course does? That course is a direct path to encounter Esau. Remember Esau? Esau's the brother he stole the birthright from. Esau's the one who's waiting for their father to die so that the next time I see you, I'm going to kill you. And so Jacob begins to wrestle and wonders what to do. And so in typical self-preservation fashion with Jacob, Jacob comes up with a plan for when he encounters his brother Esau. He says, "I will try to appease him by sending gifts ahead of me." Now, imagine this deal. You have stolen your brother's birthright. You have stolen your brother's blessing. You have, in effect, put him in a subservient place to you and everything that you have. And all of a sudden, when he wants to kill you and you're forced in a position where you can't avoid encountering him, your idea is to send him gifts. "I'm going to appease him by sending him gifts." I wonder what kind of gifts he thought would have appeased him. Exactly how many gifts would it take to compensate you for your birthright and your blessing? Earlier, it was a bowl of stew because he was hungry. I wonder what it'll be now that he's had time to sit and to stew. And then it says, "When I see him in person, perhaps he will be friendly to me." So the gifts were sent on ahead while Jacob himself spent that night in the camp. Now, the way that this unfolds is the gifts are sent ahead with a group of people. And then another battalion of people are sent, and then another, and then eventually Jacob's family is sent. So the only person in the camp is Jacob. He's the only one there. He's there all alone. And here's what it says happens. It says, this left Jacob all alone in the camp. And sometimes, though we're relational beings and we're created to be in God-honoring relationships with other people, sometimes when it comes to wrestling in life, sometimes we have to wrestle alone. Sometimes it's just us and God, us and a circumstance, us. We have to wrestle alone. So Jacob's left all alone in this camp. And I wonder that night, as he laid there, I wonder what he wrestled with. I would imagine that he probably wrestled with Esau a little bit. He probably wrestled with having stole his birthright, having stole his blessing, and having wrestled with exactly how mad is Esau. Is his commitment to kill me still there? I imagine that this was one of those nights where Jacob laid his head down on the pillow and his mind started to race and he couldn't sleep because he began to wrestle and wonder and all that. I imagine that he wrestled with Laban. You know, okay, so I've got Esau this way, and Laban's guys want to kill me, so maybe they're coming from this way, and maybe this, and maybe that. And I wonder what he wrestled with. And I wonder if he wrestled with his family. Am I ever going to see my family again? If Esau wants to kill me and he sees my family, maybe he'll just kill my family to get back at me. Which makes you wonder, why would he have sent them in the first place, right? Jacob sent them in the first place because Jacob is a master at self-preservation. And so then as he's wrestling, as he finally drifts off to sleep, again, this is me reading into the story. As he finally drifts off to sleep, you know, sometimes when you can't get to sleep, and you're wrestling, you finally get your mind to shut down, and you finally drift off, and then all of a sudden you wake right back up because the alarm clock goes off. Jacob, I imagine this, he finally drifts off to sleep. And it says, and a man came and wrestled with him. Go back. Thank you. This left Jacob all alone. And a man came and wrestled with him until the dawn began to break. Now what's fascinating about this is the man wrestled with him until the dawn began to break. We are not given at this point the identity of the man who wrestles. We're not given any record of the conversation that took place. You know, it doesn't appear that the man just showed up and said, hey, let's wrestle. You know? It's a man shows up and wrestles with him until daybreak. And the fascinating thing, as the wrestling match goes on and as dawn begins to approach, go ahead and go to the next one now. It says, when the man saw that he would not win the match. And I tell you, I wish that I had a clear way to explain or understand this idea that when the man saw that he would not win the match. I can't even begin to wrap my mind around that, and the study that I did doesn't reveal it in a way that I feel confident in communicating and sharing. But when we know in the story that the man he wrestles with is God, but God realizes he won't win the match, it's just this amazing thing. It says, so when the man saw that he would not win the match, he touched Jacob's hip and wrenched it out of its socket. In the absence of a lot of details around no conversation, around no initiation, around all of that, we get this detail that the man reaches out and touches the hip and wrenches it out of its socket. For a wrestler, the hinge point of strength and mobility is the hip. If you disable the hip, you basically render the wrestler defeated. That their inability to move and to leverage and all of that with the hip, that without the mobility of the hip, the wrestler is in a vulnerable position to be defeated. So in this moment, and here's the fascinating thing too, in this moment, when the man saw that he would not win the match, he He won't win the match, but yet he renders Joseph vulnerable to defeat. And so, see, it's just a fascinating thing in the storyline. I won't win the match, but yet I put you in the position to defeat you. It's almost like, I hope I'm not speaking inaccurately here, but it's almost like I could beat you in a moment, but I'm choosing not to. I'm doing this instead of that because I have a reason. And again, I don't want to read too much into the text and in too much into the narrative that's not there. But there has to be a reason why God decides not to win the match, but to win the war, kind of thing. Does that make sense? Still with me on that? Okay, apparently not. It's all right. I'm with me. Go ahead and go to the next slide for me. It says, then the man said, let me go, for the dawn is breaking. So, won't win, wrenches the hip, puts Jacob in the position of being vulnerable for defeat, and then says, let me go, for the dawn is breaking. Dawn is the time when the previous day and night ends and the new day starts. Dawn is the time when the dark gives way to light. Dawn is the time when what has been is over and what is yet to come is in front. But Jacob said, I will not let you go unless you bless me. So it's almost like something begins to shift for Joseph or Jacob. Why do I keep calling him Joseph? So it's almost like something begins to shift for Jacob. That maybe as he wrestled through the night, he wrestled with the pattern of his life, that he wrestled with Esau, he wrestled with Laban, he wrestled with the 20 year, he wrestled with the herd of sheep, and he wrestled with Esau being mad and Laban's sons, and he went through all that, and maybe he wrestled a little bit with God. And then when there's this physical wrestling match, which we don't have a lot of details about the physical nature of this, but then all of a sudden it's almost like Jacob says, I don't want to let you go. I want to hold on to you until you bless me. And I wonder if in that moment Jacob went back to the promises that God made. I'll give you land. The land you're lying on, I'll give to you. I'll give you descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky. All the families on earth will be blessed because of you. And I'll be with you. And I will protect you. And maybe the very person that he's wrestling with is the very person that's going to be with him, and the very person that's going to protect him, the very person that wrenched his hip is the one that's going to provide the protection. And Jacob says, no, I won't let go. After all I've been through, after all that's gone on, I will not let go of you until you bless me. So then, interesting question comes. The man says, what's your name? Which is amazing. I mean, you've wrestled with me all night and you don't even know my name? Am I some random dude that you just picked? You happened to come across me as you're walking through and I'm settling in for the night, and all of a sudden you got this urge to just wrestle somebody? Oh, look, there's somebody laying on the ground. I think I'll go wrestle him. I don't know who you are. What's your name? I have a suspicion that this wasn't a random act of wrestling that took place. I don't think the question is, what's your name? Because in that culture, a name was tied to the essence of a person. It was tied to who they were. It was tied to their nature. Names were picked for a very specific reason. Jacob was named Jacob because it means supplanter. And when he came out grabbing the heel, the family knew, this is going to be a life of wrestling. This is going to be a life of this. So his name was picked, Jacob, supplanter, for a reason. And so he replied, I'm Jacob. And you have to wonder if in this moment he doesn't say, I'm Jacob. I'm the one who deceived my brother and stole his birthright. I'm the one who deceived my father and stole my brother's blessing. I'm the one who deceived Laban. I'm the one who Esau wants to kill. I'm the one who Laban said. That's who I am. That's my name. And as we've wrestled all night, that's who I realize that I am. And that's why I won't let you go until you bless me. Something has to change. Something has to be different. Not just in my circumstances, but something has to be different in me. I have to be different. As a result of this wrestling can't be in vain. Now something has to be different. My life has to be different. I'm Jacob. I'm the supplanter, and I don't want to be that person anymore. And it says, your name will no longer be Jacob. From now on, you will be called Israel, which means either wrestled with God, or it means God will rule. Because you have fought with God and with men, and you have won. Up to this point in Jacob's life, it would be fair to say that you could sum up Jacob's life by Jacob will rule. Jacob has manipulated. Jacob has deceived. Jacob has pursued what he wanted to pursue, even at the expense and the cost of others. Jacob has supplanted. Jacob has done all that he has done. And now it says, you will no longer be called Jacob. Now you will be called Israel because you have wrestled with God and with men and you have won. And in that moment, something is now different. Something is new. Something is fresh. And it says, then Jacob says, please tell me your name. Please tell me your name. Well, why do you want to know my name? The man replied. And then it's fascinating. There's no more conversation. That's it. We have no record that the question was ever answered. We have no record that the name is ever revealed. The man just simply says, why do you want to know my name? Because I want, listen to this, because I want to know the essence of the nature of the person I just wrestled with. I want to know the person who wrenched my hip. I want to know the one who had the ability to take my life at any moment but chose not to. I want to know the one who I asked to bless me. I want to know the one who has the ability to bless or curse. I want to know who you are, at the core of who you are. And it says, then he blessed Jacob there. We have no record of what the blessing was. I don't think we need a record of the blessing because I think the promise had already been made. And through all the wrestling, the promise is being fulfilled. Jacob named the place Peniel, which means face of God. For he said, I have seen God face to face, yet my life has been spared. No record of an answer of the name, but Jacob knows. Jacob knows who he's wrestled with. Jacob knows that he has seen the face of God and that he has wrestled with God and that he can go back to God's promises. And then the next part of the story. The sun was rising as Jacob left Peniel and he was limping because of the injury to his hip. After this encounter, when Jacob rises the next day, he leaves with two things that he had not had before. He leaves with a new name, and he leaves with a new limp. In the new name, he has a reminder of God's promise, not just for the land, not just for the descendants, not just for the blessing, but for his presence and provision and protection. And in the limp, he has a reminder of God's grace. He has a reminder that at any moment God could have taken his life, but chose not to. And I imagine, just imagine every step that Jacob took from that point in his life served as a reminder of the wrestling. If we fast forward to the end of Jacob's life, he calls his 12 sons together. Can you imagine having 12 sons? Well, I mean, dude had four wives, so you can't imagine having four wives. Why would anybody want more than one? One is just so incredibly fantastic that you could never get better than that. People ask her about me all the time, and I'm trying to decide how to translate it. She goes, "He's unbelievable." Jacob calls his 12 sons together, and he blesses them. His 12 sons form the 12 tribes of the nation of Israel. And through those 12 sons and through the nations of Israel, through the nation of Israel, they settle in a land called the Promised Land. A land that God gave them to call their home. The nation of Israel grows, and the descendants grow as numerous as the stars of the sky. And then Jesus is born, and Jesus is a descendant of Abraham, and Jesus is a descendant, and Jesus ultimately fulfills the promises that God made to Jacob in blessing all the families of the earth through what he accomplished for us that we could never accomplish for ourselves. I get Jacob's story, because sometimes it seems my life is just a big wrestling match, and sometimes I don't even know what I'm wrestling with. You know, am I wrestling with my own insecurities? Am I wrestling with my own expectations? Am I wrestling with circumstances? Am I wrestling with people? You know, am I wrestling with other people's perceptions and other people's expectations? Am I wrestling with God? Am I wrestling with what I think God wants for me? Am I wrestling with being disappointed in God? Sometimes I don't even know what I'm wrestling with, but I feel like there's this constant tension of wrestling that goes on. So I understand. And then there are times in Jacob's story where it seems like he gets it. And then Jacob falls back into the old patterns, and it seems like he didn't get it at all. And sometimes I wonder. There are times where it seems like I get it, and then there are other times where it seems like I don't get it at all. And then there are times in the story, there's this one moment when Jacob says, "I will not let you go." It seems like through it all, Jacob came to a point where the most important thing to him was holding on to God. When it would have been easy to let go, when it would have been easy to give up, when it would have been easy to try to supplant God, Jacob said, "No, I'm not going to let go. I'm going to hold on." And I hope that as much as my life is marked with wrestling in its own fashion, I hope that my life is marked even more. And like I said earlier, and what's more, I will be with you, and I will protect you. And I hope that as much as my life is marked with wrestling, what's more, my life is marked with just holding on to God and refusing to let go of God. My guess is that in some way, each and every one of you, whether you're in the room or you're online or you're watching later, my guess is that each and every one of you has had a season in which you've wrestled. Maybe you're wrestling now with something. And through all the wrestling, maybe the safest place to be is in the place of just holding on to God. Let me pray for you. Dear God, thank you for today, for this time together. Thank you for loving us, for caring about us, forgiving us the freedom to wrestle. But thank you that even in the wrestling, that we have the ability to hold on to you. That even as we wrestle with you, we hold on to you. And God, I get it. The wrestling seems to be a part of life. Seems like each and every one of our lives is marked with wrestling in some way. But what's more, Let our lives be marked with holding on to you. Pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. All right, we'll roll the preview video for next week. When the preview video is over, we're dismissed. Thank you again for choosing to spend this part of your day with us. I hope that the rest of the day is just a good day in which you find a way to hold on to God.